Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokette. Thanks for tuning in to Connoisseur Media's award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Today, we're going to meet another Connecticut neighbor who saw a need and launched a movement that will see her walking Route 1 from New York to Rhode Island on Memorial Day weekend to fortify her new nonprofit, Veterans Wellness Center of America, providing much-needed support to underserved state veterans. Then we're going to touch base with the leader of Bridgeport-based Center for Family Justice with important information for those facing or surviving through domestic and family abuse situations year-round and especially in these troubling times. And we're going to bring in a representative from NFIB, the National Federation of Independent Business, the largest small business association in the U.S., to discuss their latest survey on the impact of the COVID-19 outbreak on small business and how new state and federal support programs rolling out right now will offer small businesses help and hope. While we want to remind you that the current COVID-19 situation may impact any activities promoted on our program, we're going to be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokette, right after this reminder. Another For the People friend at New England Young at Heart, that's founder Elaine Marcuccio, is offering a limited home meal delivery to a limited number of qualified residents in Ansonia, Derby, Seymour, Oxford, Monroe, Prospect, Southbury, and Beacon Falls. All the meals that are prepared are fresh, frozen, and include protein, starch, veggies, dessert, and fruit. If you'd like more information or to learn how to help and be put on the list for emailed weekly menus, call 203-463-8339 or visit neyoungatheart.com. So I don't know if anybody who has listened to the award-winning For the People has ever, for fun or for other reasons, started down in Greenwich and got on Route 1 and drove Route 1 all the way to the Rhode Island border. And you can imagine with all the traffic and the lights and the hustle and bustle of all the commercial businesses and everything on that strip of roads, how long it might take for you to actually drive it. But today we're going to meet somebody who's going to be in just a few weeks walking it. I am so pleased to be here visiting with Dr. Heather Stafford. She is the founder of the Veterans Wellness Center of America. VWCofA.org is the website. If you'd like to check it out, we'll be mentioning that a few times over the course of the next few minutes. And you know how we like to showcase grassroots initiatives that bloom into projects that do good, and Heather's is one of them. So I'm so pleased to be joining her at one of her two offices in Western Connecticut here today. So the VWCA is working to provide veterans with the best care possible while removing barriers to care and to offer services that are important to that patient base, and to also research and be on the forefront of new treatments for those patients. And we're going to find out a lot more about why Heather decided to take this leap away from what she does on her otherwise working hours. So Heather, thanks for having us here at the office. Tell us a little bit about yourself above and beyond the VWCA, and then we'll talk about that inspiration and how you put that together. We're here in a little wellness office that you have, one of two in Brookfield.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming out. Yes, I got my master's degree in Colorado. I went to the Colorado School of Traditional Chinese Medicine. And while I was there, we had a forum class where patients come in and explain what's going on in their lives. And we had a veteran come in, and his story was so touching. I decided then that in my practice, I wanted to focus on veterans and part of their care. So I moved home to Connecticut, got my business, and started working on some veterans. And then through the course of working on them, decided to become a provider with the VA. And that took almost 2 years. to just get into the VA system and have veterans start coming to my practice. I started working on veterans, and within 4 months of working on veterans of every sex and age you could think of, I saw a need that the VA is inundated and overwhelmed and just can't possibly fulfill when it comes to integrative medicine. And it was then that I kind of formulated the idea for my nonprofit.
But your experience with those veterans who came in when you were getting your certification in Colorado mm-hmm. was not by far your first exposure to veterans. You had a number of them in the family, so you kind of grew up in a veterans environment.
Correct. Both of my grandfathers are veterans. My uncle is a retired Navy lieutenant, and I just have even... you know, an ex-husband was a veteran and his father was a veteran and my brother-in-law and my current brother-in-law, they have all served and my father-in-law as well. So I've just been surrounded by veterans my whole life. Yes.
And just for clarification for folks listening, just talk for a moment about what you do. What is your profession and your business?
Well, I am a doctor of acupuncture and Chinese medicine. Along with starting my nonprofit and my business, I got my doctorate last year, so I've topped off my education. And what I focus on here in my practice mainly is acupuncture and Chinese medicine. So my practice is big on pain remediation, mental health issues, stress, anxiety, panic, things like that, as well as some fertility and just, I run the gamut and my focus is acupuncture. So it's that with cupping and some herbal medicine, but I mostly focus on the pins.
Well, I've had the opportunity to meet a few alternative clinicians over the years who all had seemed to have an affinity for or an attraction to supporting veterans. So it's just kind of interesting that folks who conduct professions like yours also seem to really have this philanthropic spirit that somehow leads toward recognizing and supporting veterans.
I think that a lot of that has to do with the veterans find us. The VA is an amazing place for them to get care. And all of my veterans talk about how caring all of the doctors and nurses are there. But Western medicine, even though it's wonderful with what it can do, a lot of our veterans have chronic issues, chronic pain, chronic stress management, PTSD, traumatic brain injuries, things that Western medicine can't necessarily address with a pill or a medication. So they seek us to relieve their minds, to reduce their stress. Because when you have chronic illness and chronic pain, that leads to depression. That leads to all of these other things that then become chronic. And that's why we lose so many of our veterans. So they find us because we can often give them that sympathetic, parasympathetic reset and reduce that stress level, reduce some of their pain. Not that we make it go away, but we're able to reduce it to the point where they can live and they can manage it within their mind. It's so hard to explain with words what we're able to do with these alternative medicines.
Yeah, and certainly your praise of the VA system is evident. But given the constraints of federally delivered healthcare in the veterans world, you could see where a lot of them might end up hitting a wall where kind of Western medicine has to end by policy or protocol, and yet there are centuries of proven success within alternative practices that are very slow to be embraced or for whatever reason can't be embraced. So you're not disparaging or in any way criticizing the VA. You're simply trying to create the existence of a realm of support and relief that the VA just isn't wired to embrace.
Correct. The VA has, because it's so large, it has a very distinct policies and procedures and protocols for absolutely everything that they do. And that is one of the things that makes them wonderful. Yet at the same time, it puts limitations on integrative medicine.
Right.
You can't take someone who has back pain or stress or anxiety and put them on a chiropractic table with paper in a very sterile hospital type environment and think that that patient is going to relax, let alone get the best benefit of care. Not to mention there are limits on how often they can get treated. Even when going to outside care, we're only allowed so many treatments.
Right.
And I have a pilot who went through the window of an airplane, the front windshield of an airplane, and he's all over body pain every day of his life, and he's allergic to opioids. Yeah. I give him acupuncture once a week, and I bring him from a pain level of 10 down to a pain level of 5, where that is still pain, but he calls me his miracle because he can get through his week and function as a human.
Yeah.
So the VA just doesn't have the capability for that, and we do.
Yeah.
We have the softer music, the heated tables, the quiet rooms, the places where these veterans can come and mentally and physically heal.
I think it's also important to reinforce the fact that the VA acknowledges and will not dismiss or in any way distance themselves from a patient who is seeking alternative care, unless it's like written into their actual VA plan of care that they should resist or avoid certain alternative practices, which probably is few and far between. So the VA doesn't stand in opposition to the veteran as a patient seeking other alternatives similar to what you provide.
They don't. I do see that there is areas of opportunity for the VA because of those policies and procedures. It's a slow process. So where the VA doesn't discourage it, there is still often a barrier to care. And along with my nonprofit, the spouses and caregivers really don't have a lot of services, and we want to include them in that as well.
Great. Well, we're chatting for another 5 minutes or so with Dr. Heather Stafford. She is the founder of the Veterans Wellness Center of America. We're visiting with her here at one of her two Lotus Flower acupuncture practices in Brookfield, another one over in Bethany, if you're listening in the greater New Haven or Waterbury, Naugatuck areas. She would be interested in visiting with you if you can benefit from her services. Her nonprofit, the Veteran Wellness Center of America, you can access on the internet at VWCOFA.org. So Heather, in the last 5 minutes or so that we have with you, give us the quick chat on how you put this nonprofit together and why it is that you have decided a good way to publicize it is to walk Route 1 from Greenwich to the Rhode Island border.
I put this nonprofit together, like I said, after treating veterans for less than 6 months. I saw that there was a gap, and I was driving in my car, and I'm like, what could we do to help these people? And the idea just came to me. It was to pull acupuncture, chiropractic, massage, yoga, and Tai Chi classes in a meditation space for that complete integrative package. And what better way to do that is with a nonprofit? And I knew with a nonprofit, eventually, once I got up and running, I could apply for grants and funding, federal funding from the Department of Defense, even the VA. And I could also take some of that overflow that the VA has and fill a need and actually work in tandem with them. So I just, you know, went to LegalZoom and got everything going. I started it all on my own. I got my 501c3 letter in May of last year. It took about a year and a half to get all of this stuff done. And then I started thinking, in today's world of media, and everybody has Instagram and all the things, that, you know, me just calling up and say, hey, I have this great nonprofit for veterans, people are like, oh yeah, sweetheart, that's awesome.
Get in line.
But yeah, get in line with everybody else. And I looked at my husband and I said, you know, in order to get extraordinary attention, you have to do something extraordinary. And I'm just an acupuncturist, but I've done the Avon Walk for Breast Cancer like 3 times. And I'm like, well, I can walk. And Route 1 goes all the way across Connecticut. I think I'm going to end it at the World War II Memorial in Groton, which is a tidge shy of the border, but still, I think that would be a great place to finish it off around about Memorial weekend. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, I can walk. And my husband thinks I'm crazy. And he's like, you're going to hurt. And I'm like, well, veterans hurt every day. And if by me hurting for a week can actually gain some of the attention that these men and women deserve and get this nonprofit going, then that's 2 or 3 months of training in 1 week worth it.
Well, Senator Chris Murphy walks across Connecticut almost every year. Maybe you could tap him for some tips or as a temporary walking partner. Chris, are you listening?
Well, I've actually sent letters to some representatives, and I've only gotten feedback from one so far. So I'm still waiting for Mr. Murphy to reach out.
Okay. Well, maybe we'll put a little bug in his ear with the award winning for the people. But so in the last couple minutes, then for folks who are listening, what can they do if they've heard something that ignites their passion to help you help veterans?
There are so many things that they can do when it comes to me and my nonprofit personally. A, just share it. You know, you don't have to have money, but share it with people. If you do, there are several ways that you can donate or give on my website. Or if you have a passion and want to walk with me, I'm taking walkers, if not a lot of them, because I don't want to get a ton of attention that way. But if someone wants to come and sponsor themselves and walk a few miles with me and we can chat, or if they want to volunteer for the walk and maybe help me find, you know, different facilities along the way that I may need. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a monetary gift. It can be a gift of their time or to help spread the word. Anything that's possible, even put me in contact with people that do have a pocketbook that may want to help out.
You don't want to stop traffic, maybe slow it a little bit once in a while.
Right. I don't mind getting a little bit of attention and getting some beeps along the way, but I don't want the police to have to come out and escort anybody. So, yeah.
So I guess in closing then, the question that's kind of been burning for the past 5 or 10 minutes has been, have you ever, just in your tiny world with your tiny point of light, trying to make a difference in this massive multi-generational population of veterans who may need the support and the relief, have you ever treated a veteran where they did not express to you that you've been able to provide some degree of relief?
In the 5 years that I've personally been working on veterans now, almost three years as a VA provider, I have had, honestly, 1 to 2. And I can specifically tell you the reasoning. One was a person who had rheumatoid arthritis. He was 80 years old. His ankles were the size of footballs. I mean, at that point, his issue was so progressed. Honestly, there's nothing that I could do. He needs Western medical intervention. The only other time a veteran hasn't gotten one other that I can think of is if they actually didn't follow my suggestions and come as often as I ask them to. Because oftentimes people treat acupuncture like it's a spa treatment, and it's not. It's a medical service and it's underprescribed, especially with our veterans. So if I tell someone they need to come in 2 or 3 times a week to start out, it's really important that they do that. That's the only time I have had veterans not have a positive result.
Very good. Thank you, Heather, and best of luck with the walk, which is scheduled to start approximately when?
I'm looking around the week leading up to Memorial Day weekend. So I haven't quite nailed that down yet, but I'm working on that.
The Veteran Wellness Center of America website is vwcofa.org. Dr. Heather Stafford is its founder, and as you heard, could use your attention and support as she boosts her presence and profile by walking from almost border to border here in Connecticut on Route 1 in the coming weeks. Heather, thanks for having us.
Thank you so much for coming.
So as social distancing has become the latest, greatest norm in the face of the coronavirus, that is presenting some particular issues in households that are impacted by domestic and family violence. And that's why I'm glad we're able to wrap up the program this morning with Beth Fitzpatrick from the Center for Family Justice, which provides free, confidential, trauma-informed services and coordinates care for all victims and survivors of domestic violence, sexual violence, human trafficking, and child abuse in six Fairfield County towns, Bridgeport, Easton, Fairfield, Monroe, Stratford, and Trumbull. Beth, thanks for being on the show. We've got some very important news that involves heightened bad situations for a growing number of people, but also some really good news to wrap up the program, talking about how people can help in their own homes, on their own, in their own neighborhoods, and in their own communities. So let's start with talking a little bit about how the Center for Family Justice has sort of pivoted to continue to provide the best range of support and services, which sometimes really have to act in a very immediate way. And talk to us a little bit about what you're hearing from constituents, because they're sort of now in a situation where it's not so easy for them to just walk out the door and go somewhere else if they're facing some sort of abusive situation.
Yes. Hi. Thanks so much, John. This is Deb Greenwood. I have the privilege to be the CEO at the Center for Family Justice in Bridgeport, Connecticut, mm-hmm. and we serve a good component of Lower Fairfield County in the greater Bridgeport area. And twice a week since the outbreak of COVID-19, as you can only imagine, as most nonprofits and most for-profits, how do you deal with an issue and how do we really keep not only individuals using our services, but how do we keep our staff safe, and how do we approach something like this? We've never had to really be put in a situation like this. We know one thing that we've learned over the decades: victims of domestic violence are very much an isolated person, whether mostly female, but mostly individuals that are living in our houses across the state. And there's nothing that's making this any different right now. Our great concern is how we continue to support people remotely. And that's what we're doing, not only at the Center for Family Justice, but also around the state. There are 18 domestic violence agencies in the state of Connecticut that serve components of our state. And what we know is our hotlines are on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Our counselors that are assigned to the people that have been coming in, whether it's been support groups or coming in on an individual basis, still need that help. So we don't want to keep them isolated. We want them to continue to be talking to our counselors. And that work is continuing. In addition to that, there are people that are in anxious times. We've not met them yet. Who are the new folks that are there that are dealing with stresses, whether it's physical abuse, financial abuse, emotional, all of the above? Just putting all of these uncertain circumstances out there right now, we realize that if you have to add to the scenario of a household abuse, we know that it takes the scenario to a whole different level. We want individuals to realize there's still a way to reach out, whether it's calling our hotlines, communication through texting and social media, being able to find a safe way to plan and keep themselves safe. If you're talking about children living in the household, you're also talking about another additional level of stressors because you're not only trying to worry about yourself, you're worrying about your children in addition to all of that. So there's a lot of free confidential support, whether, again, it's calling our hotlines, which, again, they're on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So we need to be able to let folks know that whether you're working with a counselor and had been doing that prior to the outbreak of this virus, but if you are still someone who's starting to experience these issues, how can I, in a safe way, reach out and still be able to talk to someone? By finding your way to one of our hotlines is definitely a way to communicate, again, right, whether it's on the phone or through social media.
Very good. And Deb, I apologize. I pulled a Ron Burgundy here. I had Beth Fitzpatrick's name written in front of me. And so, of course,
okay,
I read what was on the card. Deb Greenwood
is
the leader of this organization. Beth is the one from Community Outreach who helped arrange it. So, yes, Deb Greenwood with us on the line from the Center for Family Justice, serving a number of communities in Fairfield County. So, Deb, in regards to these hotline services, I mean, from my perspective, there's an anticipation of a significant surge in new client needs and new victims potentially coming to the table. Talk a little bit about your awesome workforce of folks on the other end of the line and how they are persevering through this and still able to serve others while they're taking care of themselves and their own families.
Absolutely. I always say, you know, we talk about first responders, and I put individuals that are doing this work as it's related to domestic violence and sexual violence victims as first responders. We are shoulder to shoulder with law enforcement. We are also shoulder to shoulder with anyone that has been put in harm's way. And we realize folks that are being put in these situations most definitely are being put in harm's way. And the goal right now is to try to find ways to not have things escalate. And when I say that, that word, we know things can go dangerously wrong very quickly. And how do we help and support that? The obvious is if someone immediately felt that they were in harm's way, we always will encourage someone to call 911 at any time. Working with law enforcement, they are our single number one greatest partner when it comes to domestic violence. We also realize that this is one of the most dangerous jobs law enforcement has. Working with all of our police chiefs across the state, and I can say for the six chiefs that we work with in the greater Bridgeport area and all of patrol in our six towns and across the state of Connecticut, you've got a very well-informed, educated group of police officers that have all been given the 411, but much more than that, how to work with domestic violence agencies like the Center for Family Justice across the state. They know how to get someone connected to our hotlines. They understand when they are walking through the door what those questions are they need to look for. They need to be careful that there might be weapons in the house, sure, or children in the house. So it definitely is a very emotional time, and you're adding now one of the most inconclusive, uncertain times with a virus that also is looking at many different unending circumstances where we don't have a beginning or end. So definitely working with not just our staff, but working with our partners in each of our communities, I think that's critically important to know law enforcement and agencies like ours, like the Center for Family Justice, need to really be connected at the hip.
Yep.
So we can really be supporting and keeping victims of domestic violence safe.
Yeah. So in the spirit of law and order, we've kind of talked about the frontline people from the first responders at the other end of the domestic violence crisis lines and law enforcement who are heading to intervene and rescue individuals who are victimized. Let's switch gears to the judicial system, which is facing some constrictions now. Maybe there's some assumptions out there that if people call, why should people call for help? When you know the police will come and maybe put some relief on the fire in the moment, but in the aggregate, with the courts being closed, essentially, I think a lot of people may be not up to speed that they can still get judicial services and get them pretty quickly.
Yes, thank you, John. It's critically important for anyone listening that if you are that person that needs a protective order, restraining order, you still absolutely can just access that information. Things are being done remotely. Restraining orders, protective orders are still being put into place. Our counselors that are assigned to our courts, whether it's the Bridgeport Court or New Haven Court, Waterbury Courts, please know that restraining orders and protective orders are still being put into place. Things are moving along. There are websites to be able to make those calls. Our counselors are returning those calls. Everyone's assigned to be listening for a message that's being left. So if you're not getting a live person when you're calling the extensions, please know someone is going to get back to you immediately. We're going to schedule it. We're going to take care of you immediately. So please do not think that if you show up for a restraining order hearing that it will not be issued. Those are still continuing to happen.
We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with Deb Greenwood, the leader of the Center for Family Justice. Stick with us. Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through LoveCT. And if you run, work for, or volunteer for a qualified nonprofit, you could apply now for a chance to receive a $5,000 radio contract to promote your event or nonprofit brand. Just go to our radio station website, hit the events tab, and click onto LoveCT to apply for the grant and help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm John Voquette, your public affairs director here at Connoisseur Media. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. The coronavirus pandemic has put additional strain on our community, but low-income families are disproportionately affected. With schools and community organizations shut down, fewer infants and toddlers are getting the help they desperately need. These families need your support now to keep their babies safe and healthy. And in response to the pandemic, the Diaper Bank of Connecticut has launched a rapid response fund to provide additional diapers to state agencies and community partners so they can maintain a sufficient supply of diapers and prevent shortages. If you can possibly help with a donation of as little as a few dollars or more, to find out how to donate packages of diapers or otherwise support the cause, just visit thediaperbank.org. We're back with Deb Greenwood. She is the executive for the Center for Family Justice. Our thoughts are also with individuals who are already sheltering in place, in all likelihood, in an environment that they are completely unfamiliar with because they were rescued from a dangerous situation, oftentimes with children in tow. These folks are now not only being resettled in a brand new and unfamiliar location, but they are in a much less likelihood to be able to get up from that location and go back and interact with or talk to folks that are familiar to them. Tell us just a little bit about how your organization, the Center for Family Justice, is working with the folks who are already sheltered.
Yes. So 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, we have shifts of staff that are assigned to work in our safe houses. And what's happening is there is a tremendous amount of oversight from from our administrative staff all the way down and up. Our team is really shoulder to shoulder making sure those that are living in our residential safe houses are getting everything they need. They're being well fed. There's activities to keep the children as preoccupied as possible. There's school distancing that's happening. So we're trying to keep the kids in the most normal day-to-day, if that's at all possible. You know, you're talking about individuals that are living with folks that they don't know, but we are trying to make this as a family environment so that things are happening to keep the level of emotion and stress as minimized as possible. So the staff are all experts in their field. Obviously, they're leaving their own families to make sure they're taking on the responsibilities that they are so passionate and brilliant at, and making sure that they're reaching out to every one of us to say what their needs are, making sure we have enough food, we have enough supplies, we have enough cleaning pieces. We are cleaning consistently. We have that piece put in place. We did that 2 weeks ago when the outbreak happened, that we would immediately have people that are responsible to make sure that, you know, we're wiping down our rails and bathrooms and counters, that we're trying to keep up with everything that's necessary, having the masks that we need. Most importantly, people are being fed that the way they need to. As time progresses, we are on a day-to-day basis having communication, asking about supplies. And I know where we're doing that. The other 17 safe houses in the state of Connecticut are doing the exact same thing. People that are living in domestic violence shelters are communicating on a statewide basis twice a week with our Connecticut Coalition Against Domestic Violence to talk about what those needs might look like. What I've found, John, is that community groups are trying to reach out in the best way they can to ask what they can do to help support those living in these scenarios.
Excellent.
So there's been a bit of an outreach, probably hasn't come out as much as we might need right now because it's so new. But I will say as time goes on, we certainly will be saying, you know, we might need more diapers and baby formula.
Sure.
And all those things that we know supplies will be depleted as this continues.
Great. So it's important to tell people they can make contact with you through your website, centerforfamilyjustice.org, to find out more. You can also reach the agency at you can reach the agency at what would the number be to call? I was going to give out the abuse hotline, but if people are calling to make a donation, or they are at the store and they pick up an extra package of diapers and they want to drop them off or get them to you, how do they do that?
So they can definitely call, and I would say the best way for them to do that would be just to reach out electronically, go onto our website. There is an area that is very clear and says donations, so they should go to centerforfamilyjustice.org.
Great. In the last few minutes that we have with you, Deb Greenwood, it's been 7 years since you folks ramped up a Walk a Mile in Her Shoes fundraiser, and this year's was scheduled to take place down at the Fairfield train station. That is obviously not happening as people may remember it. However, you know, talk about a creative twist. You guys are now taking the Walk a Mile in Her Shoes to the virtual level. In the last couple minutes that we have with you, let folks know how they can help your agency by having a virtual Walk a Mile in Her Shoes, and how our friend Chief McNamara, Gary McNamara, who was the former police chief of Fairfield and now the director of public safety and government affairs at Sacred Heart University, are playing a role in getting this brand new initiative, an old initiative with a new twist, onto the pavement.
Yes, and as we talked about it, we've been doing this. This would have been year 8 for us, and last year we had over 1,500 participants, and we basically get the opportunity to walk a mile from the Fairfield train station down to the Fairfield Town Hall. And the proceeds that are raised every year not only raises awareness about sexual violence in the month of April and child abuse awareness, the proceeds help fund kids that we work with at the Center for Family Justice that have been living in a household affected by domestic violence, or kids that have been sexually assaulted. And we work with them all year long. These kids get to go to Camp Hope, which is the only evidence-based program in the country. And there are 32 Camp Hopes in the United States. And we were proud enough to be one of them 4 years ago when this whole movement started. So those proceeds go to support 65 kids that go away to summer camp up at Camp High Rock in conjunction with the Central Connecticut Coast YMCA.
So how are you telling people to do it?
So here's what we need. If someone would go to our website under Walk a Mile in Our Shoes, they can walk themselves. They can walk around their yard, their neighborhood. They can make a pledge, whether it's $10 or $20, or they want to do a sponsorship. They will get their name on a T-shirt. There's all the details and information on our website under Walk a Mile in Our Shoes. Any dollars we raise between now and April 25th will support kids to go to Camp Hope this summer. We need your help.
Very good. The Center for Family Justice, as you're hearing, provides cutting-edge prevention, education, and training in communities to create social change, as well as all of the outreach and services for immediate victims and survivors of domestic violence, sexual violence, human trafficking, and child abuse across six Fairfield County towns. We hope that you'll go to their website, centerforfamilyjustice.org, and find out how you can do your own virtual Walk a Mile in Her Shoes fundraiser. As you're hearing, they could use that help because things are just ramping up with the COVID-19 situation, but also just ramping up in terms of how this situation is affecting people who were on the edge of family and sexual violence situations. We want to remind you also that there is a 24/7 hotline for domestic violence. It's 203-384-9559. For sexual assault, 203-333-2233. In Espanol, 888-568-8332, or call 211 info line for referrals, and 911 if you are in imminent danger, no matter where you're listening to this program. We want to thank Deb Greenwood, who's the capable leader of the Center for Family Justice, for being with us this morning. And as we drive around Fairfield County and we see gentlemen walking around their neighborhoods in women's shoes, we are going to be thinking of the Center for Family Justice and their virtual Walk a Mile in Her Shoes event. Deb, thank you so much for your time this morning. Well, I was saying before we turned on the microphone for this call that we really have the right guy at the right moment, as we are literally catching up with Andy Markowski, who's the state director of NFIB, just literally within about a half a day since Governor Ned Lamont announced, and hours after the Connecticut DECD announced their big new bridge program to support local small businesses, and hours after the folks in Washington, D.C. announced this massive, unprecedented and historical package of benefits that are going to be rolling out to both individuals and businesses impacted by the coronavirus. So, Andy, interesting times. Supersized, I guess, is a understatement. I do want to remind folks that the NFIB, the National Federation of Independent Business, has been advocating on behalf of America's small and independent business owners, both at the federal level and at the state capitals. They are a nonprofit, nonpartisan, member-driven agency, and Andy is running Connecticut's office. So, Andy, first of all, really appreciate you taking the time this morning. We don't have a lot lot of it, but there's a lot to pack in here. First and foremost, before any of this exciting new news developed over the past 12 to 24 hours, the NFIB was out in front of it about a week ago announcing the release of a brand new survey on the current impact of COVID-19 on small businesses. So let's first go to that. At the time of the release, you were looking at 3/4 of small businesses negatively impacted by the outbreak. And I have to imagine that between the time you hit send on that press release on March 23rd and even today, that meter has continued to run up.
Yeah, John, I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, thank you for having me on and you know, looking to get NFIB's perspective here on behalf of small businesses. You're certainly right. It's been a crazy, you know, last few days, let alone, you know, last 12 to 24 hours. It seems like we have breaking developments coming out of the federal capital as well as, you know, the state capital almost on an hour by hour basis. But, you know, I think you nailed it when you said NFIB was really kind of looking ahead to see what the impact of the coronavirus would be on the small business economy as a whole. And, you know, our most recent survey data that again came out on the 23rd showed that basically the impact, the magnitude of the disruption on the small business sector is tremendous. And that changed very quickly because a little than a week prior to that, so almost 2 weeks ago now,
The sun was
those
still
numbers
out.
Had been flipped. Yeah. The sun was out. You know, people were aware of the virus, and you know there were pockets of it here and there, but numbers flipped. At that point in time, really only about 1/4 of small business owners reported that they were adversely affected, and in a little over a week, that flipped where over three quarters of small businesses were negatively impacted by the outbreak. And, you know, my phone has been ringing off the hook, and I'm sure you're hearing from listeners as well, and will continue to, that businesses are being impacted. And, you know, that's what we always say. Small businesses are the backbone of the economy. And it just shows how important they are during these times.
Yeah. One of the interesting points, however small, in this latest survey for March 23rd is that the percentage of those surveyed who didn't believe they would be impacted by the outbreak almost exactly matches the percentage of businesses that, at least as of March 23rd, were seeing some positive trending as a result of the coronavirus. And I imagine many of those businesses were engaged in certain types of manufacturing and support to clients who are responding to the coronavirus.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. And, you know, it's important that the supply chains stay up and running right now. In crises, there are always business opportunities. You know, and moreover, you know, one of the things I'll say is for those businesses that have seen an uptick as a result of this, you know, I think some of that is due to the fact that small business owners, by their nature, are entrepreneurial. They're resilient. They try to adapt, and you know, we see a lot of that happening right now. For example, in the restaurant sector, you have restaurant businesses that had never done significant online ordering or delivery or takeout before, who've had to quickly pivot. And for those business owners, it's a matter of survival, and that's where a lot of small business owners are right now.
We also heard in Governor Lamont's press briefing, I think it was on Wednesday of last week, as we broadcast this program, that he was already touting small businesses in Connecticut, including one that manufactures parachutes that are coming forward looking for a way to create PPEs and other personal protective equipment. And then, of course, a distillery up in Litchfield that has now taken to dispensing hand sanitizer for anyone that shows up with a bucket or a barrel. These are just just two tiny examples of the way, as you are probably seeing, small businesses are not only looking to continue sustaining themselves, but looking to play a role in combating and addressing this pandemic that we're facing.
Yeah. And in fact, you know, I received, you know, another example for you. I received a phone call from an NFIB member company in the state. First and foremost, he wanted to make sure that his business was deemed, quote unquote, essential, and could continue his operations. And then he said, you know, assuming that he could continue, he volunteered to help. He said, you know, my company processes specialty chemicals and minerals that are used in the supply chain for making things like the paper that goes in masks and rubber and neoprene membranes, and, you know, anticipating kind of a national supply chain ramp up, if not a statewide effort. He said, you know, what can I do to help? And so I put him in touch with the appropriate folks at the state level. And I think there are a lot of examples of businesses like that that have stepped up, whether they've donated PPE, whether they are, you know, changing their systems and processes to fill whatever need there is right now. And that's really the story about small business. You know, small business owners are not nameless, faceless corporations. Our NFIB members here in Connecticut are part of the community, and they want to continue to serve their community as best they can in good times and in bad.
So with that in mind, in the last 3 minutes or so that we have with you, Andy, not just for NFIB members, but for any small business members, tell them a couple of the key points you're able to glean based on what you know about this very, very recently announced relief package coming out of Washington, D.C., and the bridge program that was just announced yesterday in Connecticut as we record this on Thursday morning.
Yeah. So, you know, small business owners right now need assistance, and they need it quickly. And the state of Connecticut, to their credit, has stepped up. The governor and DECD commissioner announced the Small Business Bridge Loan Program. And NFIB is certainly thankful to the Governor Lamont for putting this together very quickly. This essentially allows small businesses, anyone with 1 to 100 employees, including sole proprietors, to borrow up to 3 months of their business's operating expenses. And here's the best part, 0% interest as long as you pay it back within 18 months. So it's a short-term cash infusion to help cover operating expenses during these difficult times. And DECD and the state of Connecticut are doing everything they can to make the application process smooth and expedited. It's all being handled through an online portal at the DECD website.
How about the national package?
So things are a little bit more nebulous with regard to that. At the federal level, they are expected to finalize details of a program that will provide additional unemployment insurance compensation for employees who may be laid off. The package also provides direct cash payments to individuals depending on their income level. And for businesses, small businesses in particular, there will be another loan program run and administered through the Small Business Administration, the US SBA. But these will be forgivable loans. Again, some of the details are still being worked out, but that's sort of another operating capital source that small business owners will be able to tap into through the SBA.
Great. Well, we know things are moving quickly and quite fluid, so we're going to say farewell to you for this morning, Andy Markowski. Wish you well with your work here in Connecticut, which certainly appears it's on the forefront of responding to small businesses through this newly announced bridge program. And we thank you and the National Federation of Independent Business for the constant work that they're doing with these research center reports on the impact of the COVID-19 virus. NFIB has been exclusively dedicated to small and independent businesses and remains so today, as you're hearing from Andy. If you'd like more information, you can go to nfib.com. And Andy, thank you for your time this morning. We'll talk to you again very soon. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.